How is the Fed going to weasel its way out of its latest problem? The Fed's talking taper, but is it living in a fantasy world? And are retail sales pointing to another recession on the horizon? Answer those questions and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today. And if you have a crown, today is a crown on day because we're talking about the Fed's biggest problem, which is negative rates and how they're going to try to get out of it. They have one way out, and it's very bond bullish. They're going to pancake the yield curve, smash it down, and I'm going to show you exactly how they're going to do it. Because if the Fed doesn't act, they're running the risk of their current policy tools should they fail. And we don't know if they are because we've never done this before. But if they fail, all is going to break loose because the dam is going to break and rates are going to go negative. So the Fed is going to do something. It started to do something. We've talked a little bit about it. I want to give you the big picture of how the Fed is going to try to keep rates from going negative while smashing down the long end of the curve. So let's start by going to the standing repo facility agreement. Now, before we get into this, I guess I need to clarify, just for those of you who are perhaps tuning into the show for the first time, what the difference between reverse repurchase agreements or reverse repo and repurchase agreements or repo. So a reverse repo is when the Fed borrows cash from a financial institution, such as a money market mutual fund or a commercial bank, and provides them collateral and pays interest for the privilege of borrowing that cash. And they pay it on an overnight rate at what is called 5 basis points or 0.05%. A repo loan is the exact opposite of that. That is when the Fed lends cash out into the financial system and they charge an interest rate for that. So let's take a look and see what they're doing, because the Fed created two what are called standing repo facilities, meaning they're willing to lend cash at any time for any reason, as long as you have the collateral or treasury security. Now, granted, you have to be, you know, a commercial bank or whatever the rules they've given. It's not something I can do or you can do. But anyways, the key is they made this a standing facility, meaning at any time, people can do this. Let's go take a look at the press conference again, not the press conference, a press release back on July 28th. Where the Federal Open Market Committee on Wednesday announced the establishment of two standing repurchase agreement or repo facilities, a domestic one, also very important, a foreign one for foreign and international monetary authority. So now I want you to understand, anybody that meets the criteria domestically or internationally can come to the Fed window and get cash. So you kind of want to be thinking that perhaps this is being done to alleviate potential dollar shortages. It is. But is it something bigger than that that the Fed doesn't want to admit because they're in a nightmare scenario? Now, the minimum bid rate for repos under the facility will be initially set at 25 basis points, somewhere above the general level of overnight interest rates. So what does that mean? What that means is to borrow cash from the Fed, you have to pay an interest rate of 0.25% per year on your money that you're borrowing. Now, the interesting thing is what you can post as collateral to get here. So let's see if we can find that. Here we go. Under the standing repo facilities, the Federal Reserve will conduct daily overnight repo operations against Treasury securities, agency debt securities, and agency mortgage-backed securities. So here's the key. If the yield you are receiving on those Treasury securities is greater than 25 basis points or 0.25%, you can borrow from the Fed and still be cash flow positive on your yield. That's important. Now, there's another important factor here of what the Fed has done. In the past, the focus for financial institutions has been to hold a large amount of treasury bills, which are 12-month and shorter maturity. Now, why do they do that? Why, which is what we refer to as pristine collateral, so important to the banks? Because it matures quickly, it doesn't fluctuate much in value because it's very short-term debt, and it is readily sellable on the market. There are tons of buyers and tons of sellers every day who will gladly exchange hands to provide the necessary cash to the financial system. Now, when you understand what standing repo does, is it now turns the entire curve effectively into pristine collateral. Hey, you've got a note, a T-note, which is a 2 to 10 year, or a T-bond, which is 20 to 30 year, and you need cash now, you come to the Fed and we'll give it to you. So they've turned the entire curve and made it liquid. Now, why would they do that? Well, to alleviate dollar shortages, that'd be one. What do we see? What do we learn from Jeff Snyder about what happens when foreign institutions or foreign central banks need dollars? What do? Sell treasury securities. Well, now they don't have to sell them. They can go to the Fed, post overnight repo, and get the cash they need and still stay positive on their yield. Because right now, I believe 3 year and higher yields are better than 25 basis points. So what you have now is full liquidity across the curve overnight. And that is a game changer. Some of the Fed should have done a long time. But why did they do it? Of all the times when we have this blowout in the reverse repo problem, why would they do it? Well, let's take a look at what's going on in the overnight reverse repo. And what we see is too much cash. There's $1 trillion sitting here in cash in the financial system. Now, why isn't this going to go away? Because there isn't enough pristine collateral to back it. There's not enough T-bills in the system. So right now there's a shortage of $1 trillion in T-bills in the market. Now we can go and look at the U.S. Treasury, headed by former Fed Chair Janet Yellen, who is now Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen, and we know that this is being drained down, but at the end of September, it's projected to be up at $750 billion, about $300 billion higher than now. Well, we have $1 trillion problem and $300 billion T-bill issuance. Not going to work. Plus, every month, existing T-bills, as they mature, do get refied down the curve. That's what the Fed, that's what the Treasury does. So the next issue is, what if the dam breaks? What if rates go negative? Or what if the Fed is struggling to hold this? Because what did they do in reverse repo? They set it at 5 basis points. They're effectively making a floor in yields without actually making a floor. Now, why didn't they just come out and just put a peg and say, look, we're going to hold rates at the level? Yeah, they can't. See, then if the Fed has a big enough balance sheet, they can do it. If they don't, they can't. Let's look at the Fed's balance sheet and you'll see why. Here we go. They're sitting on $326 billion of T-bills. So between if the Fed sold all of these off and the Treasury borrowed up, that's $650 billion for a $1 trillion problem. The Fed can't sell off its balance sheet at this point because this is its only margin for error, and it's not big. It's not big at all. And remember that Zoltan Pozsar of Credit Suisse said that the reverse repo problem could get up to $2 billion or more. So the Fed's got a huge problem. Rates could go negative if reverse repo doesn't hold, or if something else goes wrong and cash comes in, it could drive rates negative. So what do they need to do? They need to get short-term rates up. So now the question is, how do you do it when you don't have the Treasury in a position to issue more T-bills and you don't have the balance sheet capacity to flood the system with T-bills? What do you do? Well, you get people that have T-bills to sell them. You get people that have T-bills to sell them, but there's a problem. Why would they sell them? Because they need that pristine collateral. And it doesn't, maybe they don't need it, but they want it and they hold it in T-bills. So how do you get somebody who has T-bills to cough them up and sell them and get something else? Oh, you come out with a standing repo facility that says, hey, effectively, if you've got a T-bill, why don't you sell it? Because all you're gonna get all you're getting is 5 basis points. Why don't you sell that so the banking system can get the collateral it needs, the money market mutual funds can get the collateral it needs, and why don't you go out the curve and buy a note or a bond? And if you need if you happen to need cash, come to the Fed. We'll give it to you for 0.25% per year. And you start to think about why the Fed did this, because if you get enough people selling T-bills, what happens to rates? They go up. And if the Fed can get short-term rates above 5 basis points, what will happen? the money market mutual funds and the commercial banks that are going to the overnight repo now to get 5 will go to the market and get it. They'll buy the T-bills that are yielding more. So how do you get them to do it? You do it through the standing repo facilities. And so all of a sudden you have a position now where people sitting on large quantities of T-bills can sell them and buy the curve, go out and buy notes and bonds. So what does that mean for the yield curve? You figured it out? It means intermediate long rates are gonna go down. So let's look at what's happening. Here we have the 4-week treasury bill yield. And it's sitting just above zero, right around 0.05% or 5 basis points. Here is the entire curve. Now there is a large supply of T-bills in the market. They're not held by the Fed. There's just a lot of them out in the market. So again, how do you do it? Well, you come out this curve and what do you find? There's all kinds of yield out here. And what will happen is as institutions sell those bills and go and buy notes and bonds, knowing they can get to the standing repo facility, even indirectly through the banking system, that will put downward pressure on what's called the long and intermediate end of the curve and cause a flattening. You can see a flattening right here where the yields started to pancake down. The problem is the pancake means yields are going where? Well, quite possibly to zero. Now, is the Fed listening? Now, does that make sense of why the Fed announced this when they did? Because what they're trying to do is drive short rates up, and they're doing it at the sacrifice of long rates. They have no choice. Now, the predominant view of the Fed is doing this because of a taper. No, they're doing it because they have no room for error. If rates go negative, the financial system blows apart. The Fed does not have the balance sheet capacity to do it, and it would become an absolute nightmare. They have no choice. In fact, I don't even think they have any other options to fixing the problem. Now let's talk about the minutes that came out today from the last FOMC meeting, because there's all this talk of taper. What is taper? The Fed reducing their asset purchases. Oh, did I mention that part of the problem of all this cash in the banking system is due to quantitative easing, suppressing interest rates? So investors choose to save cash instead of going and getting yield. So the Fed is only making the problem worse by doing more QE. And so all they're doing is now incentivizing people to buy notes and bonds and drive yields down the long end of the curve. You want to know why they're not going down despite all the sentiment of everyone thinking yields are going to go up? You're fighting the Fed. All right, let's take a look at the minutes and see, is the Fed going to taper? Looking ahead, most participants noted that provided the economy were to evolve broadly, bold terms, and as they anticipated, which they do believe, they judge that it could be appropriate to start reducing the pace of asset purchases this year because they saw the committee's substantial further progress criterion as satisfied with respect to the price stability to goal. Really? Like, did you really think prices are stable? Okay. And as close to being satisfied with respect to the maximum employment goal that we are like 7 million people off from, although we do have 10 million alleged job openings. We'll see how that works out. Various participants commented that economic and financial conditions would likely warrant a reduction in coming months. Several others indicated, however, that a reduction in the pace of asset purchases was more likely to become appropriate early next year because they saw prevailing conditions in the labor market as not being close to meeting the committee's substantial further progress standard, or because of uncertainty about the degree of progress toward the price stability goal. Gee, you think? So what are the probabilities? Well, I'm going to lean on Dr. Harold Milgram, who spent many years in Washington, D.C., and would be considered a policy expert. And here's what he had to say on Twitter. I didn't save the tweet to show you. Here's what he said just recently. He said, there's two things you need to understand. February, Powell's out of office. There's no chance that anyone wants to actually implement a taper prior to that because they're going to wait and see. Is he going to keep his seat? Is he going to lose it? And is someone else going to get it? Too big of a risk, especially for Powell, who does not perhaps want to start tapering and risk losing his seat. Number two, you have to remember who nominates the Fed chair, the president, who confirms them. Congress, what's coming up, midterms. So perhaps you are an heir to the throne and you've got some people on the right committee. They may not be there for you when you need them. So according to him, until we know who is the next Fed chief and until the midterms are over, don't plan on any taper. course, as we start to look at the economic data, may not be possible. Let's get into the economic data because there's lots of stuff going on here where we see a slowdown in China. Industrial production slowing down to 6.4% year over year. That is not good. And retail sales slowing a little bit to 20.7% year over year. As we move into the U.S. data, we've got the New York Empire State Manufacturing Index slowing from a record-setting 43, or near record-setting 43, to 18.3. Now, what does that mean? It means it expanded. The manufacturing sector in the Empire State expanded at a slower rate. Let's take a look at a couple points here that are worth seeing as we look at new orders slowing, shipments slowing, unfilled orders rising. So that's good. Yeah, it kind of makes you wonder if there's a rush to get these unfilled orders out or if people were just placing orders in. Delivery times remain still long. Inventories slowing. But here's some interesting things. The prices paid is slowing, but prices received is rising. So does that mean that manufacturers are passing on these higher prices and getting them? It could mean something as simple as the prices they're receiving, they're already under contract and prices paid are coming down. So the people could have, you know, said, I will pay that amount, and they're getting it. Meanwhile, in the back end, the prices are starting, starting to slow down. It doesn't necessarily mean they're completely passing it on. That could reverse pretty quickly. Number of employees not changed too much, up slightly. The average work week is slowing. So you're not seeing in the factory sector, at least in New York, this huge surging demand. You're seeing the demand slow down. Let's take a look at the tick data. What are we seeing in June? Well, we saw foreign holders of treasury securities increase their purchases and holdings, and foreign officials also increase theirs. As Zero Hedge points out, overall June was buy all things in the U.S. Long-term treasuries purchased almost 11 billion, agency securities almost 23 billion, corporate bonds almost 14, and corporate stocks a little over 25 billion. Let's keep digging into the economic data. Now look, the three-month bill auction, 7 basis points. So you're getting some indication that this Fed's plan is working. They're starting to see some of these short-term rates move up. Six-month bill auction, 5 basis points. Not quite there, but getting there. Let's move on into Tuesday and right into retail sales. Massive miss. Now I want to keep in mind that the Fed posted, not the Fed, the Bureau of Labor Statistics said 943,000 jobs were created last month in July. Now remember, the actual number of jobs was minus 133,000, so they seasonally adjusted it up to 943. But look what happened to retail sales. Retail sales fell minus 1.1% in July. So what we're already seeing is, aside from the jobs the Fed, the BLS has to make up, demand from consumers is slowing as states are dropping off of those extended unemployment benefits. And on September 6th, everybody's off. And not only that, but 7.5 million lose all of their benefits. So I want you to keep that in mind, that is an issue. And if we look at retail sales, what do we see on a year-over-year basis? Man, they're tanking down to still a very hot 13% year-over-year, but it is heading down. Now, we look at industrial production, and it's up 0.9%. So the answer was, well, sales are slowing, but look, there's all these, you know, industrial production's up, and orders, that must mean orders are up and demand's up. No, this is a case of, if you build it, they will come. Remember, what is the view is there's this massive inflation, massive pent-up demand, and all the spending is coming because the people didn't spend any money before with all their stimulus checks. And of course, we know they did. The question is, if you build it, will they come? Who's right? The consumer, which is 70% of the economy, at minus 1.1% month over month, or is industrial production right? Well, let's take a look at industrial production. And on a year-over-year rate, we see it dropping to 6.6%. So I overlaid the two for you so you can see that retail sales leads industrial production, because what will happen is if industrial production doesn't slow down as demand slows down, that means shelves and warehouses will start backing up and you'll have an inventory crisis. On that note, capacity utilization in factories ticks a little bit higher, still under where it needs to be to see actual sustainable inflation ticked up to 76.1. And when you look at inflation, which I overlaid, consumer price index, what you see is when capacity utilization starts to peak, Well, the CPI starts to roll over because it just can't hold it. And you can see even when capacity utilization is rising, it's not high enough to sustain inflation until you really get to the 80% level. It's not up here until it starts to, and it's able to hold it before coming down. And then it gets up here around 80% and it's holding it, comes down, not even close to that. Again, another view that inflation is indeed rolling over and heading lower. As we move on into the data, what do we have? Wednesday. Let's look at the inflation now coming out of Great Britain, and then we'll go down into the Eurozone. How about Great Britain? Month over month, zero. So went from 0.5 to zero. That is not inflationary, not deflationary. It's a disinflationary move, but no signs there on a month over month. All right, let's keep moving on. Core CPI in Great Britain, zero. Not so good. How about producer prices on the input side? Up 0.8%. How about on the output side? Up 0.7%. So that's core. Where's the PPI? Here it is. PPI output 0.6. So they're not even being able to pass those prices on. They're not even able to pass the prices on. Let's move on to the broad Eurozone. What do we see? CPI month over month, deflationary at minus 0.1%. So it went from 0.3 to minus 0.1. How about the core? Minus 0.4, deflation to minus 0.4. More deflation. What is that telling you? What's coming to North America at some point in the near future is what we're seeing in Asia and Europe. Mortgage applications down 3.9%. Again, not putting much demand on higher yields, telling us that yields need to fall to create demand. Building permits were up 2.6%. Housing starts down 7%. Kind of interesting. Again, we see the slowdown in the housing market, and you can see it in the mortgage market index. If we pull this up, let's see if it'll, there it goes. Maybe. There it is. And we can draw a line, and you can see that is not shooting higher. It's starting to roll over again. So there are not enough mortgage applications telling you that you're not going to see higher rates there. Crude oil, great report. Inventories down 3.2 million. And we saw gas inventories only up 700,000 and distillate stocks down 2.7. So we continue to see inventory draws, but we're not seeing higher crude oil prices as it bounced off of about $65 a barrel. So anyways, what we're seeing now, when you understand the Fed, nightmare scenario, and what they're gonna do, smash rates down. Taper? Probably not. Keep an eye on retail sales, because remember, that data is only likely to get worse as more and more people don't have jobs. And those that are getting jobs are going to have less income. Anyways, as always, thanks for being a fan. Thanks for subscribing. Appreciate you so much. We'll be back on Friday for our last show of this week. You know the words I was going to say, but I'm not allowed to say them anymore, so we won't say that. Bye now. The content of this video provides educational information only, not intended to provide investment or advice. This material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed in the video that do not affect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.